Welcome to Greta Talk, and this is different from On the Record 7 p.m., which you watch every night at 7 p.m., right, or you DVR it, but it's different because we have a little longer talk. But what's not different today is that one of the stars of our political panel, A.B. Stoddard, is my guest today. Nice to talk to you, A.B.
Thanks for having me, Greta.
Okay, this is a question everybody out there wants to know. What does A.B. mean?
My first name is Alexandra, and my middle name is Brandon, and my mom's name is Alexandra, and my dad's name is Brandon, and they went to the hospital thinking they were having a boy, and a girl came out, and they decided to name their daughter after themselves. And it went on from there, and I ended up, because my mom writes books about being happy, being mistaken for her when I first got out of college and was a young reporter, and so I stopped using her name. And I use my initials.
Have you? So this is relatively new in the last, well, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, because I just got out of college.
Yeah,
just started working as a reporter.
That's right. A week ago.
Thank you, Greta. Yes, it is so new.
So your high school friends don't call you A.B.?
Right.
What do they call you? They call you Alexandra?
They call me by my last name or they call me Alexandra. And when I introduce myself, I mean, my husband calls me Alexandra, but now my niece calls me A.B., my mom calls me. It's become sort of it's so long now. It's always been my working name and people, it's a, sort of a nickname. And so a lot of people call me A.B.
So if you meet someone new for the first time and you say, hi, I'm A.B. Stoddard, you don't say I'm Alexandra Brandon Stoddard.
Well, it depends if it's like at the kids' school or something and people have seen my name on the email as Alexandra. It's weird a lot.
All right. So why'd you come to Washington? You're not from Washington. Why'd you come here?
I came here because I had traveled here a few times with family members and I thought it was just the coolest place. I grew up in New York City and I thought this place was had the excitement of New York, but it was beautiful and the buildings were low and there was grass and there was water, you could get to a beach, you could take the subway, you could take your bike, you could take a bus, you could have your own car, you could walk. And it just seemed much more of a comfortable place to be with the thrill of it being the capital. And I wanted to be a newspaper writer, and I thought it'd be much better than trying to scrounge for a job in a suburb of New York City, living in a basement apartment there and, you know, trying to catch the right bus or the right subway. And
paying a fortune for that apartment, too.
That's right. And it just was it was the right choice. It was the right choice for many reasons, for the excitement and the lifestyle.
Did you ever intern here a lot? I mean, I interned summer of 1975.
I interned at the Washington Post. I sorted mail there for a year.
Really?
Before I got my first job in Prince William County, Virginia, as a reporter.
For what paper? Was that the Post edition there or the Prince William County paper?
No, it was actually the Potomac News in Dale City, across from the big Potomac News Mall. I mean, the Potomac, you know, the big mall out there.
Something, whatever.
Mills Mall.
All right. So how long were you there?
3 years.
And then?
And then I really got the bug to cover Congress after the Clarence Thomas hearings. And I ended up working for States News Service. And I had States News Service back then would let you cover the Congress without any experience. So we went to markups. It was a business that was set up. It was a very good idea. It was sort of a lower down than AP coverage. So it wasn't just regional. It was like granular. You would get a small paper in – I was writing for papers in Alaska and Louisiana, and you would get down into issues that maybe their AP regional reporter couldn't cover or wouldn't take the time to cover. So I was doing turtle excluder devices for my Louisiana papers. I was doing oil and gas for Alaska, a lot of wetlands issues. Those two states actually had overlapping energy and natural resource issues. I'd never been to either state, but you covered the delegations and you got into the weeds for their local issues, and you literally just went to markups and hearings.
And how long was it with the States News?
That went on for a couple years. I think it was around two. Because I went there in 94 and I started in 96 at the Hill newspaper where I am now. But I left.
And did what?
In between, I went and was the Senate reporter for World News Tonight for ABC. And I was the Senate reporter for several years, did radio, did internet TV stuff for them, knew I did not want to be a TV reporter, so I tried to get back to print, did some freelance stuff to get back to print, and ended up at The Hill in 06, and apparently it's 2015, so that's gone by a little quickly.
Well, 9 years, slightly. I have my good math. All right, where were you on 9/11, you know, when you first heard?
I was I was 3 weeks away from delivering twins, and I was at my house, and I was going down to the ABC News Washington Bureau because the day before, on Monday, September 10th at 4 in the afternoon, I had interviewed Senator Ted Kennedy in his office, and I had been told by – when I got back to my booth at the Capitol by ABC News, my manager back at the Bureau, and by Linda Douglas, who was our correspondent, that they would no longer allow me to come to the Capitol because they're afraid that I was going to have the twins on the marble floor doing stakeouts in the hallway. And that I was to report to the Bureau from that day forward and never come back until I was a mother because they didn't want to be responsible for any early delivery. So my job the next morning was to go to the ABC News Bureau, and it was, you know, I was moving rather slowly. So I, the first plane had gone, the first crash had happened, and I got in the car anyway and just listened to it on the radio. And I was heading to ABC News thinking that at that point we thought the next plane was going to go into the White House. So I was pretty much convinced, which is blocks from the White House, ABC News Bureau, that that's what was going to happen. And there I was.
You know, the reason I bring it up is because some mornings I wake up in Washington, all there is fighting. And I must admit, even though I'm, you know, part of the media and I guess part of the problem, that I think to myself, you know, it'd be nice to wake up and we're all getting along. And I thought, when was the last time we all got along?
That is the last time.
9/11, it was like you heard all these slogans, you know, America working together, we're all pulling together, we're doing this together. Like, what in the world happened that we went from all, like, you know, pulling together, working together, to be at each other's throats? What happened?
Well, that was temporary. And, you know,
we worked together?
It was polarized before 9/11, and that was a great unifying, connecting event. But when I came to Washington to start covering the Congress in 1994, what I've seen in my 21 years covering the Congress is this, that when I came here, we were on the fax machine and people couldn't identify. First of all, you didn't have to start raising money the day you were elected. You had to work with the other side. It was allowed. And you had to cut deals and you had to go home and brag about the deals that you cut. You couldn't electronically identify and target certain political factions of your constituency within your own district. And so if you factor in the money and you factor in the technology and the sort of the what's happened to politics in terms of the business of politics, it's just a complete – there's no motivation and there's only a price to be paid for working across the aisle. So what I used
Isn't
to know –
Isn't that ugly? It's so ugly.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I can remember covering Don Young and Jerry Studs as the minority and majority chairman and ranking member on the Marine and Fisheries Committee. And I remember during the Defense of Marriage Act vote, that would have been, what, in 96? You know, it was this big, tough vote that Clinton made the Congress take. And Jerry Studs was over on the Democratic side. And Don Young went over and sat on the House floor and put his arm around him. That would never happen today.
Just incredible.
We all watch. And that would never happen today. And I give Don Young credit for that. But it happened before 9/11. And I think that that unity that you and I remember so well and so fondly was just temporary.
You know, but it's – I mean, I think America would really like to see them work together a little bit more. And you know, it's
– Oh, definitely.
You know, but yet, you know, I will say is that there are a lot of viewers who if you don't – if a political candidate on our show doesn't agree with them, they cut them off at the knees. I mean, there is very little latitude for considering other viewpoints and having a good, strong debate sometimes.
Well, look what's happened to our media. So now we have, you know, with the internet, we have coverage that's tailor-made for people on the different, you know, polarized ends. And so – and that rationalize their choices and their understanding of issues. And so it – that has only – not only has the professionalization of politics separated the actual lawmakers, the voters as consumers are in their corners now too because of what they're reading and consuming.
It's too bad we can't just jump to, like, as we go into 2016, jump to the debates, because the debates are pretty interesting. They really are about issues. There are a few jabs here and there, but you don't have the – I mean, they can't send negative ads, you know, to the podium 2 feet next to them. I mean, all the sort of things that really poison the process.
And they can't lie.
They can't lie. But, I mean, but they can't lie in the negative ads. But, the you know, if we could have multiple debates
– I agree.
You know, it would really clean it up a lot.
I think there the debates come also in the general election too late and too quickly. I think that there should be more of them stretched over more time, and so that it's not at the end, because we saw that, you know, rise of Romney, and then everything hung on Obama's second debate in 2012. I think it should be a really long process of the country being able to hear the differences between them and them not feeling so desperate to win that moment.
You know what I'd love to do on the record, if I could get anybody to agree, is I would like to take two candidates, you know, a night. And right now, the Republican field, for instance, I think I counted 15 last night or something. The 15.
Incredible.
But I mean, George Pataki might run, Santorum might run, Ben Carson, Rubio, Bush, Cruz is in. I mean, there are a bunch of them. But just get two and just bring two on the set and just sit and, you know, take a 15-minute segment every night and let the two of them talk back and forth issues. You know, just talk.
Yeah.
You know,
I think people would love.
But you can't get any two candidates because their handlers won't allow it.
They don't want them to be in that situation.
Yeah. They say, why are you pairing me with this one? Well, that's
but
because
that's
it was
what's so interesting, because the most bold ones will want the most exposure to their ideas and the most coverage of the ideas, and the most bold ones would probably be willing to be matched with anybody.
Well, and it's free promo too. It doesn't cost, there isn't an ad. Maybe I could get two who are really hovering around 1% right now in some of the key places.
Right. I mean, I think, look, we just talked about Carly Fiorina on the broadcast. She brings so much to the equation because she's the only woman in that lineup. She's the most bold critic of Hillary Clinton so far. I mean, she would have no problem coming on and talking to anyone, whether you matched her up with Ben Carson or Jeb Bush. And I think that the people, you know, Lindsey Graham, we both do.
Oh, he'd be
happy to come on, right, and talk to anyone about anything. He's trying to actually force the field to discuss national security issues more. I think you have a great idea and you should keep it up. And eventually they'll all figure out that any exposure in a nice policy debate setting is good exposure.
You know what the bad thing I can tell you about this business, though, is that in the news business, if you get two people screaming at each other and, you know, not debating the issues but literally screaming at each other, you can actually see a spike in the ratings. And there's something fundamentally wrong about that. You know, it's like,
I'm with you. It upsets me.
You know, we all know it's wrong, but we all stop and watch. Now, what? There's something wrong with that.
Yeah, I know. And that's what's happened to the Senate and the House floor. I mean, they have teams of messengers to go out and you know, use strong rhetoric and make sound bites that'll be clipped for the cable shows that day. And it's not, you know, you're never convincing anybody when you're attacking them. People who are really genuinely trying to convince someone else of their ideas always use diplomatic language and always use a comforting tone. And, you know, if you and I – you're a lawyer. You've seen this. I mean, if you and I go into a conflict, a personal conflict, I'm going to go try to sell my house to someone and the tree fell in the front window the night before. I'm calmly going to approach the subject in hopes that they get a good vibe from me and they're going to hear me out and be convinced of my argument. I can't start attacking them.
Well, I think 2016 is going to be fascinating. And even, you know, all the eyes are on the race for the Oval Office, but there are a lot of fascinating Senate races. If Senator Rubio gets in, doesn't he have to give up his seat? And then who's going to run for the Senate? Maybe Pam Bondi, who's the Attorney General now, and someone – actually, I've known Pam for years, but – I knew Pam as a prosecutor, as a legal expert, not as Attorney General.
That is really fascinating, and she's a great story for Republicans. I think that, you know, Senator Rubio actually, I'm told, has until May of 2016 to decide officially. That's a long time
to give up
now.
His seat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so he can announce he's running for president and then sort of drag it out to 2016. Uh-huh. Won't that alienate the Republican Party?
The party
in Florida
doesn't want him to do that. He'll be under pressure from home to decide pretty quickly. But if he wanted to have a good run, if he's announcing April 13th, he could certainly drag it out till this fall.
But it's also interesting. I mean, it's like the thing that troubles many Americans, except those who live in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, is how those three states pick the nominees.
I know. And we keep saying maybe they won't.
They do.
But they do.
I have another thought is that, you know, we all go. Will you be going to the conventions?
Mm-hmm.
I wish all the networks wouldn't go. And here's why. No, I'll tell you why.
Right.
Because I've covered these going back, I don't know how many years, because I've been on the air since, I've been on the air almost 25 years, since the early 90s. That's too long. And, of course, a lot of listeners and viewers probably think the same thing. But we are like stagehands, because we hold cameras up, and the two different parties, they determine the speakers, the order, they determine everything. And we're like Broadway play stagehands, and we spend millions, every network spends millions and millions of dollars to do this. We could put a pool camera up and keep everybody back home to discuss it. Save millions of dollars. We could use the millions of dollars every network to go out and do stories, you know, all over the world, because it's so expensive to do stories all over the world, but we'd have that extra money.
Oh, I agree with you. I'm very worried about how our coverage of the world is deteriorated and diminished, and people are
leaving.
It's
expensive.
It's too expensive. They're not making the investment.
Dangerous.
Journalists are scared. And they're targets. It really is unbelievable. But what's interesting about the conventions is that there's still those moments. You're right about the pool camera. I agree with that. But the Americans really need the opportunity of drowning in that coverage over
the
course of many days.
I'm not saying we shouldn't show the coverage all the time, but I'm just saying it's rather
for all of us to go.
We don't have, I think the network must spend each $5 or $6 million apiece on the hotels.
I hope you've told your viewers that it's a lottery, and it's not like someone with a great job like you gets in a reasonable hotel room that's reasonably close to the location. Sometimes we're in a different state.
Yeah, but you can stand. I remember in Denver, it was so hot, and the lines to get in. I mean, the security is something else. I mean, there's really. I don't know what the viewers get or the voters get from all of us being there.
Yeah.
And I know for us, it is. It's never been. It's not fun. It's hard work. But I think I could do just as good a job with a pool camera sitting in my studio.
Well, the fun that I've had is I do panels, and I really enjoy that.
So you can do that here.
That's true.
But you can do a panel here.
That's what I've done when I've gone, and it's what I'll do in 16, is we put together events every day, and some policy panels and some political. One day's taxes, one day's energy, one day's national security, and we get really great people to come and contribute, and I've really enjoyed that part of it. But sometimes people don't make it because they get lost in the security perimeter change that morning, and the Uber person didn't show up, and they say, I've never been to Charlotte before, and it's unbelievable.
Oh, I know. My favorite was in Minnesota years ago, and I was still working for Fox. I was not still at CNN. And they had set it up so that the public could come in. It was in a big tent where Fox worked. And so the public could come in and watch us work. And it felt like we were in the petting zoo, because people would come in and just take pictures of us like we were freaks. It was so weird. I mean, whose idea was it? I'm trying to work, and I've got people, you know, screaming at me and taking a picture like I'm like, you know, the baby giraffe or something. Look, I'm privileged to go. I want to be part of the team. I'm happy to go and everything else. I'm just saying that. And of course, one network can't decide not to go for everybody else. It's got to be
right.
A group. It's
got
to be everybody.
Yeah. It has to be a group decision. You're right. You've urged some of these group decisions in the past, though, and they're brave. And I noticed that the other networks don't follow suit.
I know. It's crazy. It's a wonderful job, though, isn't it? I mean, because we get a ringside seat to the most fascinating things.
Yeah, I really try. I try to come up with what I'm going to do next. Greta, we've had these conversations, but I'm afraid to be bored, and I inherit it from my dad. I have a fear of boredom, and this keeps me laughing. It keeps me interested. It keeps me shocked. It keeps me amazed. And so it's really fun.
See,
that way.
I think it's addictive, because it is. I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, people at home follow politics just to think that we get to follow and we get paid, you know, which is even better. But it is almost addictive to find out, you know, what's going to happen with a law or with a vote or anything. It's like, It is, isn't it?
It is never dull.
It's just never dull.
Yeah, I actually remember a dull period, if you can believe this. I think it was after 9/11, after the good part calmed down, and it was like Bush was going to have a third term, and the Republicans were running the Senate, and it was in 2002. They wouldn't fight about anything. I wondered, maybe I can't handle this anymore.
Anyway, well, you've been listening to A.B. Stoddard, who you see often on, not just on The Record, I'll confess, she does special report and other things too. I didn't want to say that earlier. I just wanted, because I wanted to brag on her and claim her on my own. But A.B. Stoddard, who as you know, is with The Hill, and you'll see her all the time on all those networks. And remember, we're always adding to the Greta Talk collection. You get the latest ones or catch up on the Greta Talk sessions you've missed at GretaWire.com/podcast and GretaTalk.com. And we're also available on iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And of course, you know what to do. Watch On the Record on the Fox News Channel, 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. And DVR us if you can't watch us live. Thank you, AB.
Thanks.